You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, Republicans are advising President Trump to think twice about his recent picks to the Federal Reserve Board. We'll look at how Herman Cain and Stephen Moore could affect monetary policy, and we'll learn what the Fed does. Now, the commonly cited statistics about autism are that it affects 4 to 5 males compared to every 1 female. And many research studies have used ratios even higher to study autism, leaving women living on the spectrum significantly underrepresented. But some researchers have questioned whether it's really a predominantly male condition and are trying to better understand how many women and their experiences are being overlooked. Dr. Meng Chuan Lai is a psychiatrist and clinician scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto and an assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Toronto. He's a specialist in the gender effects in autism. Dr. Lai, welcome to Central Time.
Hello, thank you for having me.
First, can you give us a brief definition of what autism is?
So autism was initially defined as a medical condition that's characterized by two major domains. They're both early onset. One is having social communication challenges from early in life, and secondly is having what we call restricted and repetitive and stereotyped behaviors and idiosyncratic sensory responses.
And we hear people talk about the autism spectrum. What does that mean exactly?
So autism is a quite heterogeneous condition, and the term spectrum actually means people may fall onto the autism spectrum across different dimensions, from what we call more mild characteristics to more intensified characteristics. Some people may have profound difficulties with communication or intellectual functioning. Some people may be really verbal, but also having lots of challenges in other domains of life. So there's high heterogeneity within the spectrum.
And what are some of those other areas of life that people who are not profoundly affected but are on the autism spectrum might have difficulties with?
It ranges from daily social communication issues, the load of social communication, sensory environment, which could be pretty overly stimulating for many people, areas what we call adaptive functioning, including organizational skills, and for some people also that include emotion regulation aspects as well.
So where did the idea come from that men and boys are 4 or more times more likely to be on the autism spectrum than girls or women?
So this is really a historical thing. So the first case report written in North America is from Dr. Leo Connor, and his report had 11 children, and 8 of them are boys and 3 are girls. And then there are some other reports, for example, from Hans Asperger in Austria. They reported primarily 4 boys. So there's a focus on the idea autism spectrum, or in the past, Asperger syndrome, as well as high-functioning autism or autistic disorder, are more prevalently in boys and men, and that actually results in an understanding that's based primarily in boys and men instead of, in other sex and genders.
So what I find interesting is that because of this early research and its emphasis on boys and men, that was assumed to then translate to anyone who might have autism. And it turns out from reading your article and others that the way that men and boys who have autism might behave or might demonstrate that can be very different than how women and girls do.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the risk there is that if the research do not give enough attention or weight to the minority of people having the condition, it might be overstatement to say that what we know from one sex or gender actually applies to everyone who have the condition. And this is not only an autism issue. For example, in pain research, it was predominantly in males, and then people recognize okay, there are actually quite a bit of key aspects in the pain processing or perception is different in females, and even the pharmacological responses are different. So it's really important to, you know, pay attention to all sexes and genders.
Well, and what I thought of right away was that, you know, I can remember when it was kind of big news that a lot of women were having heart attacks that were not being diagnosed as heart attacks because their symptoms were presenting so differently than many male heart attacks do.
Exactly, exactly.
We are talking about the differences in autism between men and women with Dr. Meng Chuan Lai. He's a psychiatrist and clinical scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, also assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Toronto. And so, as you said, men and boys were studied more, their symptoms and how they demonstrated living with autism became kind of the standard of how people with autism were expected to be behaving. What do we know about how girls and women tend to behave when they are on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, this is a great question, and this is an area that we're actively researching and learning. By definition, the definition of autism doesn't really change by your sex or gender, but the question would be the behavior manifestation of that might actually be affected by one's sex or the gender environment, but also by other stereotypes. So maybe I can give one example.
Sure.
Here is that there is a stereotypical view that, people on the spectrum actually do not have friends, which we know nowadays is actually a wrong one. Lots of people who do have friends and who have motivations to have friends. But interestingly, some research showed that in teenage girls who are on the spectrum, they actually showed a similar level of social motivation and motivation for friendships, same as teenage girls who are not on the spectrum, whereas boys on the spectrum do show slightly decreased motivation compared to boys who are not on the spectrum. So in this case, the social motivation seems to be more affected by the gender of the person instead of whether you have an autism diagnosis. A second example would be one characteristic of autism spectrum is what we call narrow interests or fixations. So, the stereotypical view of people's autistic narrow interest could be mathematics, could be patterns, numbers, could be train systems, could be space and physics. So if one only recognized these kinds of narrow interest without looking at the intensity of that or the exclusivity of that, we may actually miss some of the interest in girls and women, and which nowadays we know they may actually involve animals, involve literature, involve social systems, involve history, involve many things that's related to the human social world. Or even a collection of fashion or other aspects. So there might be some gender components that's playing some role. So if we're over-relying on our stereotypes of autistic interest, we might actually miss some of them in women or girls.
One of the issues that I found really interesting to think about is that because neurotypical girls and women tend to have really intensely emotional friendships and spend a lot of time talking and sharing, that females on the spectrum have to be a lot better at I've seen a few phrases, masking or camouflaging. Can you explain that for us?
Yes, so this is something that we really learn from people who are on the spectrum themselves, and the term camouflaging or masking, as described by people on the spectrum, really represents an effort that they put on to appear neurotypical. So it could be related to suppressing their autistic characteristics, such as stimmings or repetitive behaviors, but it also involves some intention and effort to, for example, learn scripted conversations and telling oneself to look into others' eyes constantly, or even learning how facial expression should look like from practicing in front of the mirror or learning it from the TV series, for example. And this is kind of like trying to fit in, but it also comes with lots of mental health impact. It could be related to stress or to exhaustion or even anxiety and depression. So although they serve some bits of social coping roles, there are some expenses that come along with it, camouflaging.
I was going to say, it sounds incredibly exhausting to be doing that, even the part of the day that you are out in public, even if you can kind of, you know, relax at home, it still sounds just overwhelming.
Exactly. So that's why we learn lots of people who do camouflage and who are on the spectrum would often report that they appear okay at school or at work, but they do need a lot of time when they're back at home alone and trying to de-stress and really to, you know, recharge themselves.
We're talking with Dr. Meng Chuan Lai. He's a psychiatrist and clinician scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto. He's also an assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Toronto. He's a specialist in the gender differences in autism. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you been diagnosed with autism? Were you diagnosed at an early age, or did it take until you were an adult? Did the diagnosis help you? What do you find most challenging about living in a world that is built for neurotypical people? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now with Dr. Meng Chuan Lai about how autism can be experienced in different ways for men, women, and also for non-binary individuals. He's a psychiatrist and clinician scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, and he's also an assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Toronto. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you or your child live with autism? What has the experience been like? Did a diagnosis explain some of the challenges you have faced? And what would you most like neurotypical people to know about people with autism? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And I actually wanted to go back to something that I just mentioned. Researchers are also finding that there is a higher percentage of people who are non-binary or transgender who also seem to have autism. And what kind of correlation or connection is there?
So this is a topic, again, that we are learning and learning, but we actually don't know, you know, the reasons explaining that. So what we know is that in people who are gender diverse, there seems to be a heightened possibility that one has increased autistic characteristics, what we call autistic traits, or even having higher rates of autism diagnosis, higher than the population average. And on the other hand, for people who are on the spectrum, there's also some observations and report suggesting that the variances, the variations of gender diversity as well as sexual orientations are like widened or increased compared to people who are not on the spectrum. And to be honest, we really don't know what explains this co-occurrence, but I think it signifies the importance that clinicians and people who are supporting people on the spectrum need to have this knowledge.
And so when we're looking at the fact that women have been overlooked, women and girls, and that people who are gender diverse are not being included in research, what does that mean for diagnosis, for research, for support?
Yeah, so this really comes to the topic that we talked about initially, Judith, is that if the research about support or intervention comes primarily or even only from part of the population, in this case, majority boys and men on the spectrum, then it's kind of like only an extrapolation to say that, okay, this should apply to girls and women, but it may not necessarily be so. So let me give an real-life example. Mm-hmm. So, for example, many teenagers on the spectrum, that they would participate in what we call social skills group or social supports groups. And those are, you know, really to foster a supportive environment and really also to increase the social skills. Now, we've got quite a bit of examples that we had a group of teenagers participating, and there are six of them, but five of them are boys and one's girl. And not always, but sometimes the girl would actually feel less motivated because of the imbalanced gender composition of the group, but also maybe some of the skills or just the real life scenarios that people talk about doesn't really apply well to her own life experiences. So there are lots of aspects that we need to work towards understanding better in terms of having a sex or gender informed lens.
Let's go to the phones, and Lisa in Janesville is up first. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I was calling in because both of my children are diagnosed with high-functioning autism. My son was diagnosed at age 9, and I had noticed things with my daughter, liking animals, preferring literature, not liking large groups of people, wanting to be alone, but, like the psych doctor is saying, she made friends. So I ignored all of it, and I thought, oh, it can't be autism. We moved abroad for a couple of years, and the stress of the move brought out other symptoms. And at that time, when she received her diagnosis at 15, actually almost 16, the psychiatrist there had said that often with girls, they find the diagnosis doesn't happen until puberty or until they leave home, and the stress of having that change in their life leads to the diagnosis.
Thanks for that call, Lisa. And Dr. Lai, does that resonate with things that you've heard?
Totally. Thank you, Lisa, for sharing the experiences. This is really what we learn from lots of parents and also from many of the girls and women who do not have profound like early stage developmental delay, but who do experience challenges on the spectrum. So as you mentioned, lots of the issues may only emerge at a later stage because of the change of life or the more complicated social context, but also it might be related to people's lenses looking to or interpretation of the behaviors or challenges. So, for example, there might be a tendency of a girl being alone to be saying that, okay, she's just shy, she's just an introvert. But having that lens probably prevents her from looking into the real social difficulties that's there, and also maybe those challenges may be interpreted as anxiety, but without looking into what might be the root of anxiety, but interpreting the anxiety as the primary cause of the behavior challenges. So yes, absolutely.
Thanks again for that call, Lisa. And Dr. Lai, there seems to be some evidence also that autism could make some young women more prone to eating disorders. What might be the connection there?
Yes, this is also an emerging topic that people found young women perhaps related to some of the need of routines and some of the cognitive rigidity, and also maybe for other unknown reasons there's a higher tendency for people on the spectrum, especially women, to have eating issues. But on the other hand, the other way around, it's also a new finding that in the eating disorder population, there seems to be quite a bit of people whose autism spectrum characteristics or even diagnosis wasn't recognized at a later stage. So it's really important to keep in mind the possibility of a autism spectrum background that may actually explain some of the behavioral challenges or life challenges they have.
Let's go back to the phones, and Beth in Barneveld is up. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
I
just wanted to add that, well, I have a son who was diagnosed at the age of 9 with Asperger's, and the diagnosis helped him in school as far as getting the necessary therapies that he needed. But then we had a move from where we had been living for a long period of time to a completely different state, and at that point, we made the decision to kind of take the diagnosis and not use it in the schools and kind of see how my son was treated with some of his peers. At that point, he was in
I'm sorry, Beth, but your phone is cutting out, but we get the gist there. So it sounds like Beth was both thankful for the initial diagnosis, but then kind of, you know, when her son was doing better and moved to a new place where he didn't have that label on him, decided to see how it was going. Does that sound like something that you've heard from parents, for instance, Dr. Lai?
Yes. So to be honest, a medical diagnosis is a label that can be used for a variety of purposes. And for the conditions of autism, you know, a diagnosis or medical diagnosis is only needed really when there are some what we call functional impairments or suffering that's directly linked to the condition. So it is likely for some people that the diagnosis is useful for a long period of time. And for some people, it might be the case that it's part of the identity, but it doesn't necessarily need to be kept on record if the adaptations or accommodations are already made or in place. So there could be some flexibility in real life, like how people make the best use of the diagnosis and support.
It seems like there are quite a number of women, certainly some men as well, but women especially, where they get a diagnosis late in life or later in life, not in childhood. What's the response from them who might for the first time feel that they are understood, or maybe even that they are understanding themselves more?
That's really one of the most frequent responses that we learned from people who got their diagnosis later in life, but irrespective of the sex or genders. And primarily what we heard is that this explains my past life. So lots of stories were that lots of things do not make sense until that I have this lens of autism spectrum, now understand why this is happening in this particular way. And most importantly, this also brings people being connected with others having similar or shared life experiences on the spectrum or being neurodiverse. And that's actually a very important a channel to really, you know, move forward with the life challenges, but also the lessons learned being on the spectrum for a long period of time.
And very briefly, it sounds like from what I was reading that a group of women who are on the spectrum came together online and have really helped kind of push for these changes.
Totally, yeah, and we actually, the researchers are really learning a lot from people who have the real-life experiences, and I mean, research basically needs to follow really people's life experiences to improve the well-being of everyone.
Well, Dr. Lai, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Meng Chuan Lai is a psychiatrist and clinician scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto and an assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Toronto. You can find a link to his article, Quashing Sex Bias in Autism Research, Calls for Participant Rainbow, at WPR.org/Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.